Bringing you the latest research, tools, and common sense tips you need to get and stay healthy. It's Talk Healthy Today. Here's Lisa Davis.
If you listen to this show, you know I call myself a whole foodatarian. If it's a whole food, I'm going to eat it. So one of my favorite chefs and cookbook authors and food bloggers and Instagram people, I mean, her Instagram is off the hook. You got to check it out. Beautiful. Is a wonderful Mikey Peters. Her book is Eat in My Kitchen, to cook, to bake, to eat, and to treat. Micah, welcome to the show. I'm so excited. I'm like, where am I?
Nice to be back.
Talk Healthy Today. Oh, it's so good. I guess I get all giddy and excited about wonderful food. You know, the reason that I mentioned the whole foodatarian is you are so big on using whole food ingredients. As a matter of fact, in the book you write, note on ingredients, the dairy products and eggs I use in my kitchen are organic. The meat is from the butcher and the seafood is preferably wild. This is very important.
Yes, I like recipes where you don't need many ingredients, but each ingredient is of really good quality. So organic very often tends to be the better choice when it comes to good taste and also healthy, high nutritional value. So I like to get my vegetables from a farmer where I know he doesn't use many chemicals, pesticides. I like to know the butcher, or when I spend time in the Mediterranean, I like to get the fish straight from the fisherman. It just tastes better, and it's better for my body.
It really is. You know, you mentioned the Mediterranean. I was going to say today we're going to be talking not only about your book, which has these types of ingredients, but also Mediterranean food meeting German comfort food, which I thought was such an interesting combination. Talk to us about the times that you've spent in Malta, how that influenced your cooking, and also the German side of you as well and the cooking from that.
I mean, I'm German. I grew up in Germany, and about 10 years ago, my boyfriend came into my life. He's half American, half Maltese. Malta is an island, a tiny island close to Sicily. It's actually a country. They have their own language, actually both two languages, English and Maltese. And the cooking in Malta is very similar to cooking in Sicily. It's Mediterranean with Arabic influences. So I would say there are a bit more contrast, more spices than in northern Italian cooking. And we spend a lot of time there, especially in the summers. We spend about 2 months, 1 month there. And then throughout the year, we always go back and forth to Berlin, where we live most of the time. And obviously, it had a huge effect on my cooking, on my recipes, on my mentality, on my humor. Everything changed a lot through this experience.
Oh, it must be so lovely. And it sounds like you're really living life in such a rich and wonderful way, and out in the sun, I'm guessing, in the water, and going to farmers markets.
Yes,
and oh my gosh, can I just, it's so dreamy. It sounds so dreamlike. I think we should all come with you.
You have to deal with a lot of, with the big, big Mediterranean families if you spend time there. That's something that I had to get used to. In Malta, you're everything with the family. It's like you arrive, and then this wave, this family wave sucks you in, and then you do everything with the family. You go to the beach with the family. The family actually meets for, I don't know, we go to restaurants almost every night, but it's always in this big, big group. And that was something I had to get used to. And now I love it. And now we have a lot of friends there. And it's actually, life feels much lighter there. I would say there's more laughing and fun and joy. And so it's not just on the cooking side that it had a huge effect on my life. And but on the other side, I love Germany. I love the cooking culture here. I learned cooking from my mother, who her cooking is very much Southern German with strong Italian and French influences. And I learned all the most important cooking techniques. I learned from her. So this is the cooking the cuisine I grew up with, and it will always be very important for my life. But I find it very exciting to have this Mediterranean influence in my life, but I'm also very thankful to have all these influences, because I believe it makes our life and our cooking much richer to have the eyes and ears open and to learn from other kitchens.
Oh, I completely agree. Well, give us some examples of some recipes. Will you meld the two, the Mediterranean and the German?
I have one recipe in the book. It's a soup. It's a Maltese minestrone, which is similar to the Italian minestrone. And then I add a very German, southern German dish. It's like pancakes, very thin pancakes, similar to French crepe. And you cook them, and then you roll them up, and you cut them in thin slices. They look a bit like snails then, and you add this to the minestrone as it's quite a rich addition to make it a full meal. And so this is for me like my Maltese minestrone with the German pancakes, which are actually called frittaten when you cook them this way and then you cut them like these snails. And I have another dish. It's a German beef stew. I use beef shanks. And then I add caponata, Mediterranean caponata, which is made with eggplant, zucchini, and tomatoes, bell pepper. So I combine the hearty German meat dish with the lighter Mediterranean vegetable dish, the caponata. And actually, they work very well together, these two cuisines, because there's a lot of comfort food, very honest cooking, not very fussy. And they work with different ingredients, different combinations, and they inspire each other.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Now, what are some ingredients that you'd recommend people have in their pantry, in their refrigerator, so they can kind of whip up some of these recipes that you talk about in your book, Eat in My Kitchen?
I think the most important thing is you should always have good olive oil. I cook everything with olive
Definitely.
Oil. And if you have good olive oil and you don't have time to go shopping, you just get a loaf of nice bread, you drizzle some olive oil over the bread and a bit of flaky sea salt, and that's it. So already dinner is sorted. But and then I think good olive oil is very important. Then I try to buy seasonal produce because it just tastes better. When I buy my tomatoes when they're in season, or the zucchini or cabbages. So that's actually very, very helpful. And then the basic spices that I always have at hand, it's, I like to grind my spices, like the whole corns with the mortar and pestle. So I always have very aromatic black peppercorns, fennel seeds. I love to cook with fennel seeds, coriander seeds, cumin, cinnamon. I like to cook with citrus zest, so I always have oranges and lemon, organic, so that you can use the rind. I always have this at hand. When I have this in my kitchen, there are already millions of recipes that I can come up with. I only eat meat once a week, so that's not actually so important. Seafood the same, maybe once a week. So there's a lot about having good vegetables, good quality vegetables, a few spices, good olive oil, and a glass of wine.
Oh, it sounds great. Yes, of course. You know, it's funny because you bring up the wine because, you know, in another interview I did with you, you were talking about that your mother not only taught you about cooking techniques and how to cook seafood and meat and how to choose the right cuts, but she also talked to you about music and having some nibbles. I love that. And wine. And you say you call it your daily feast and to have that fun, enjoyable time when you're in the kitchen.
Yes, and I have that every day. And this is for me, dinner doesn't start when I sit at the table. It starts as soon as I stop my work and I go to my kitchen. I turn on the music, pour in a glass of wine, and like you said, I have some nibbles, some olive oil, some cheese, or just some chopped vegetables. And usually I cook together with my boyfriend, so it's the time that we have together where we can talk about the day. And it really calms me down. I find it very relaxing, and It's for me a very important part of this time in the kitchen, and I grew up with this in my mother's kitchen. When I visit her, we always chat in the kitchen. I help her chopping up the vegetables, and it's a very nice way to end the day with something that is special, that is just beautiful. I find it beautiful. It's good for your body as well. And it's something that's far more relaxing than watching TV. And if you make it a routine, if you make it like a daily part of your day, it I miss it. When I can't have it, I really, really miss it. It's very important for me to have this time.
What do you say? I
don't really believe when people say there are these 10-minute dishes or whatever. First of all, it's just stressful to cook this way. Very often it doesn't even work out. But that's also not the point for me. I'd rather skip a TV show or whatever. But I take these extra, let's say, 30 minutes to cook properly, because you can cook amazing stuff in 30 minutes.
You really can. You know, it's funny when you said that about, you know, the 10 minute, it reminded me of watching Top Chef or Top Chef Masters with my husband on Bravo. And we're just stressing out. You've got 20 minutes to make an amazing meal, you know, and we laugh about, we'd probably cook an egg. I mean, that would be like the only thing we'd be able to do.
Watching this makes me always, it stresses me out so much. I always feel like, oh my God, I never want to be on a cooking show. Because it really kills the fun part of cooking, because it needs some time. Like I said, you don't need to cook for 2 hours. But these 10-minute recipes tend to be rather exhausting.
Yes, I agree. Now, what do you say to people who see cooking as a chore? How do you get them to see the joy in it? What I mean, I think putting on the music, having some wine, maybe having a friend over, or what are some other tips so we don't have to be like, oh, my gosh, I have to make dinner again.
Actually, the easiest is through the food. We have dinner parties with friends quite often, and when they try a dish here, they feel like, oh my God, I have to cook that at home. But then they also, like on Saturday a week ago, we had friends over and they wanted to come for lunch. They came at 1 o'clock and they stayed for 12 hours. We ate and drank wine and chatted for 12 hours. And there was a couple I had never met before. But it was like at the table, you feel like you know each other. Within a few minutes, it feels very close. So, and we actually, they told me the same. Hey, you know what? I'd love to do that more often, even if it's just for the two of us. I'd love to cook and have this special time at home. So I think it's, invite people to the kitchen, let them experience it, let them taste the food. And then they immediately say, you know what, I don't even know why I eat out so often. I don't know why I just spent more time with my partner in the kitchen. We just cook and have a good time. Although I must say, it's important to set up some rules when you cook with your partner, because it can be stressful if both want to push their way through. So what we do is, we always say, okay, one is the chef and the other one is the sous chef. And depending on the recipe, that changes. So sometimes I'm the sous chef, sometimes my boyfriend is the sous chef. But we decided, okay, it just becomes too stressful if both of us say, no, I want to cook it this way. No, I want to cook it 2 more minutes. So it's like one says what's going to happen and the other one has to follow. It's important.
It is. You know, I laugh because this is one of those inside jokes that my husband and I have. We've been laughing about now for about 17 years. My friend had us over for dinner, and she and her girlfriend were making Thanksgiving together for the first time. And we went in and, you know, it's usually pretty relaxed. So it was very tense. And she comes over to me and she says, you know, Jill and I just don't cook well together. And just the way she said it, I don't know why. We just thought it was so funny. But it's really, now that I'm talking to you, I'm like, oh, I never thought about it. Because she tends to be sort of finicky. Now she, you know, she'll agree. So it's no big deal that I'm saying that. But it's, you know, I thought, oh, what does that even mean? We don't cook well together. I'm like, oh, that's just her being her. But I'm like, oh, I guess some people don't cook well. So after all these years, you really opened my eyes.
I think it says a lot about a relationship, but also if it didn't work out for years, it doesn't mean it has to stay like this. You can find ways to make it work. But I think it teaches you to become better in working together in a team, and also sometimes to just shut up and let the other one do. Or when you feel like, hey, I don't think this is going to work out, that you add constructive criticism. So it's always important how do you say it, and how do you bring it across. But for us, it really works out that we say, okay, we decide, is this my dish, is this your dish, and then the other one is just the sous chef. And that's actually, even if I know, nah, I don't think this is going to work out how he does it, I accept and I say, that's his dish, that's his recipe, he could do with it whatever he wants to. And that's much better.
You know, that's a good lesson. That's a good lesson anyway. You know, sometimes if my husband and I are driving somewhere and he's driving and I think I know a shorter way, I'll say, you know, you should have taken the other way. It was shorter. And he'll be like, no, I think this one is. And then I'm just a pain in the rump because I'm like, I really think the other way. He's like, you know what? We're already going this way. So, and I'm like, okay, I'll let it go. So I need to do that in the kitchen as well. You know, I want to jump back into your wonderful book in the last few minutes, Eat in My Kitchen, to cook, to bake, to eat, and to treat. With the spring and summer weather upon us, you have a wonderful salad, arugula grape and chickpea salad with orange blossom dressing. And one of the ingredients is organic orange blossom water, or preferably organic. What is orange blossom water, and where do we find that?
It's made of orange blossoms, and you can definitely find it online. You can order it online. I find it at all the organic shops here in Germany, in Malta as well. But it makes a huge difference if it's organic or not. If it's not organic, it can taste like perfume, artificial, and it won't add anything nice to your dish. So it's important to find a good quality orange blossom water, to try it first, because you also have to see, okay, how much do I actually need? Because sometimes it's more concentrated, sometimes it's a bit more watery, because it's water kind of that's infused with the orange blossom. So it has a hint of citrus, but it's more flowery. It's really, it's like a blossom. It tastes like my mother-in-law's garden smells when the orange trees are in, when you have the blossoms out. So it's but it's one of these things where it's really important. Try to find good quality. Otherwise, you won't be able to enjoy it.
Well, I like that you only eat the meat once a week. And part of that is for health reasons, but part of it is so you can get better meat. That way you don't have to eat factory farm meat and you can afford the good grass-fed organic meats.
Yes, and it's also much better for our environment, because the situation that we have right now does not work out. There are just too many people living on this world. And it just doesn't work that we all eat meat once a week. And I know that in many countries, it's still seen as a status symbol. It's like you show the other ones, hey, I can do that. We had that in Germany after the war. It was like, hey, we can afford it. We can eat meat every day. And apart from the fact that it's not good for our body, it doesn't work for our environment. So I think if you eat it once, you cook a special meal, and you pay a bit more money to get better quality, but you also have something that's actually much, much better for your body, and it tastes much better too. Whenever I get meat from a normal supermarket, it's especially chicken, for example, it's so tasteless. And when you get a good chicken leg or whole chicken from a proper farmer, it tastes so much better. And I don't think I could become a vegetarian. I love meat. I love my meat. I'm German.
Yeah, me too.
But I also feel that my body needs it. After 7 to 10 days, I feel like I'm really craving it. I really feel like steak or stew or chicken, whatever. I feel that I need it. But I think it's a good compromise that might work. I wish that more people would just say, okay, let's just have it less often. Spend a bit more money.
I agree.
Support the farmers, the smaller farmers, and enjoy it.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, I want to mention in the book, I mean, you've got some wonderful things. You've got salads, vegetables, soup, pasta, sandwiches, seafood, meat, savory baking, sweets, and preserves. And you write in the book that for all the baking, you use a white spelt flour. Tell us about this and why you use it.
I use it because I love baking. I love sweets. I have a sweet tooth. I can eat cake every day. But I just felt like when I have normal wheat flour, it's just my tummy is not too happy about it. And so a friend told me 10, 15 years ago, hey, try out spelt flour. But the white one, there is a richer one, a darker one, which works for bread, but not for finer baking. And the white spelt flour, it, you can use it for everything. You don't really taste a difference. You can really for sponge cakes, for pancakes, for cookies, for my pizza, I use it. And spelt has a much higher nutritional value. Like wheat is almost, there's like nothing in there. It makes you feel bloated. Mm. That's what it does. Yes. But it doesn't give you anything good. And spelt has a lot of good stuff in there. And it also feels much nicer in the tummy. And for example, once a week on Sundays, we always make pizza from scratch. So, And I use it for the yeast dough, for the pizza, and it works perfectly. There is really no difference. And the funny thing is, after years of using it, when now sometimes I use wheat flour because I ran out of spelt, my boyfriend, he notices immediately and he said, it doesn't taste as good. It's like you really get used to it. And it feels much, much better because I love to eat. I can eat a lot, but I don't want to feel bad after I eat. So like when I can eat a lot of pizza when it's made with spelt, and when it's made with wheat, I don't feel too happy.
Well, I definitely want to try that. Micah, the time goes by way too quickly. You are so lovely, and I absolutely adore the book, Eat in My Kitchen, to cook, to bake, to eat, and to treat. Tell us all the ways we can find you on social media and your wonderful book.
Eat in My Kitchen, everywhere. Just look for Eat in My Kitchen on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. And my blog is eatinmykitchen.com. That's where you find
fantastic
new recipes every week.
Oh, Micah, this has been such a joy. I love having you on the show. I want to thank everyone for listening to Talk Healthy Today. Follow us on social media, Facebook at Talk Healthy Today Podcast, Instagram at Talk_Healthy_Today, Twitter and Snapchat is at Talk Healthy, the number 2 day. And be sure to follow Micah on Twitter. I have to say you have the most, on Twitter, also on Instagram, because you have the most gorgeous photos. And I just want to throw in that you don't have a food stylist. You don't need a food stylist. You take all the photos of your gorgeous food. I hope everyone will check out Micah Peters, and thanks for listening. Stay well.